Hi, I'm Steph.
And I'm Jules.
And welcome to
The Babesment. Steph is a body positive photographer.
And Jules is an intuitive eating and body image coach.
And we have both dedicated our lives to empowering women to own their bodies and themselves so that they can live their biggest lives.
And now we want to welcome you into these powerful conversations.
So join us as we hear from women and anyone working through and overcoming struggles in their bodies.
We are inspired daily by the lives they live, and we can't wait to share their empowering life lessons with you.
So now that Maple has crossed the cord, welcome back to the Babes, man. I feel like, what crossed the cord? Guys, she was staring at us because she's like, hey, I want to come on the couch. And there was a single cord.
Maybe 2 inches up off the ground.
Right. And she's like, I cannot pass go. I cannot.
Impenetrable barrier. But she was really mad. And now she's sitting directly on my lap.
And now she's licking my toes.
So she's in her happy place.
So here we are. We are back in the basement. Happy October, y'all. It's my fave month.
I love October.
Ugh.
And I just wrapped up Camp Goddess for this year.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy.
Wild.
Was it the best ever?
It was the best ever.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Love it. And now fall is here. The leaves are going to be changing. The weather's getting cooler. All my favorite things are happening, which is so great. We have two really powerhouse women in the Babesment today that I'm so excited to bring to you this conversation. We have the one and only Lara Fahlberg, who's an incredible yoga teacher here in Columbus. She's also a therapist. And we also have their besties, Haley Boning. And Haley is a jack of all trades.
Oh yeah.
Entrepreneur, has had, you'll hear about her career in the pod more. But among all of that, she's also one of the founding members of the Matriots. Matriots is a PAC, a political action committee, with the mission of getting more women elected to all seats of office.
Absolutely. I cannot tell you how hyped I am about this conversation with Lara and Haley. They were both so incredible. Their insight is phenomenal. Ugh. We talk about everything from intention and aging and working in the corporate world and being women in office. Just so many fantastic
We talk things. About Botox.
We
talk about things in this podcast that we honestly haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, this is a really new conversation, a really important conversation, and one that we are so excited for you all to hear.
Mm, yes. And before we dive in, this message is for you if you are a coach or kind of work in that space. My wonderful friend Holly Toronto and I, if you've heard Holly's episode, if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Holly Toronto.
Such a good one.
Such a good one. Her and I have joined forces to bring a new program for like coaches specifically who are in the, you know, or who have been in rather, the more, you know, weight-centric, traditional health coaching space, and who really want to transition into this whole anti-diet, intuitive eating, weight-neutral model, who want to really learn, how do I coach around body image? How do I help people heal their relationship with food in the coaching capacity? Or if you're already a coach doing that, but you want more tools, you want community, you want support, or even if you work in another area, perhaps you are a social worker or a counselor and body image things come up. This also would be a great program for you to learn more about how do you navigate those, you know, those conversations. And so we're really excited. It's called the Anti-Diet Health Coach Camp. We are now enrolling. Link is in my Instagram bio and in the show notes for you to learn more. And we can chat together to see if this program is a good fit for you. But we will start the program in November. So if you're interested, definitely holler our way. It's a 6-month long program. We are psyched about it. This work is so rewarding. And we want to empower as many people to do this work as possible because it's so important.
Hell yeah.
So with that,
let's dive right in.
Let's dive right in. So, hi everybody. We're back in the Babesment.
Obviously.
And we have two pretty amazing friends joining us today. We have Lara Fahlberg and Haley Boning.
Hi.
Welcome, you guys.
Thank you so much for being here.
great. The energy in this room is fantastic.
It is.
Love it.
I mean, we both just start shimmying. It's fine. It's fine.
No, I want to.
I mean, just like the casual shimmy.
It feels good.
For those of you following along at home, you may want to shimmy right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of shimmying.
This is a shimmy moment.
Lara, you may not even realize this or know this. I'm like, I told you before, when I was very first starting my path to coaching, we were at Bakersfield. It was you, me, Katie Potts. Who else was it? I forget.
Sarah, maybe?
Yes. Yes, it was Sarah. And we were at Bakersfield. And I had just enrolled in my coaching school. I hadn't told a soul. And I told y'all, I'm like, guys, I'm like doing this coaching thing. I really want to quit my job by the end of the year. I don't know. I'm scared. And you were like, you can totally do it. You're like, absolutely. Just like focus every day. Just like put some energy there every day. It'll happen. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah. And then like, boom, I did it.
That's awesome. I do remember that actually. Yeah.
Right? I'm like, it all started right
then. I'm thrilled for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
It's so great. These little moments.
I know.
They're small to us, but they can be enormous to someone else.
Right.
Yes. So
I'm sure the two of you must have had this experience with the podcast where someone has called you or emailed you or posted on Instagram.
Every time.
You said this one thing and it changed my life.
It's pretty cool.
Well, I said that to Julie. So the shirt she's wearing that says, I don't care if you think I'm pretty.
Oh, look at my flies down.
I didn't know if that was by design. Sometimes I pull mine down.
These pants have a like very loose fly.
Yes.
I love them otherwise, but it's like, shit.
That's funny. Loose Fly is the name of my band.
Yes.
How did you know that?
I believe that passion.
That's
so
weird.
I love how like, I could be embarrassed, but I'm like, this is funny.
There's nothing. All of us have had a fly down.
Right.
Who has not had a fly down out there?
After our wedding, we have like legit just walked down the aisle out of the church. I think it was my husband's brother made a joke like, Al, your fly's down. It wasn't.
That was really not funny though. But that shirt, you said that in one of your podcast episodes.
I don't care if you think I'm pretty.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't care if you think I'm pretty. But it was your whole tone. I don't care if you think I'm pretty. And I'm like, yes! And I used to care so desperately.
Yeah.
And that's really like one of the biggest impetuses. And Haley and I have talked about this many times is that the value that we hold in ourselves. And when I was a younger woman, I definitely attached hard to that being my value. So that I was like, you just gave me the perfect sentence.
I feel like this will end up being a really great like kind of like theme for what we're going to talk about today, right? Yeah. You know, the intentions behind why we do certain things, like for instance, Botox or whatever it is, and like doing it for us, right? And not for other people. And it's like, we all have that autonomy and the authority to like do our hair, however we do our hair, or like makeup or no makeup, or to put on an outfit or not, and wear sweats. Like we get to choose and do these things for us and not have it be for anybody else, right?
For external validation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we'll get to all that later, which I'm very excited about. It'll be a great conversation. But let's obviously start with our inaugural question.
Our inaugural question. Yes. So I guess we'll go one at a time because we have two guests today. So who wants to go first?
They're both pointing at each other.
All right.
Alphabetical.
Oh. You went in both first name and last name.
I think I do.
So. There you go.
I'm ready.
All right, Haley. Our first question is, can you tell us a little bit about what your relationship with your body was like when you were younger?
Yeah, it's a great question. Lara asked me this when she invited me to join you for this podcast. And I had to think a long time about it. Mm-hmm. Because I think I was very fortunate to be raised in an environment where looks were not something that was significantly valued. Mm. It was more about smarts, intelligence, learning, education. So my looks, I don't feel like they came into play until I started to reach puberty and other people were telling me that was important.
Yeah.
That it was something that I should be concerned with.
Right.
I was more concerned with, can I make people laugh? Is everyone having a good time?
Yeah.
You know, is everyone getting along? You know, those were the things that were really important to me. So I just think from a very early age, I didn't think I was pretty because the external stimulus that I was getting from magazines and from television and from movies was telling me, well, I don't match that.
Yes.
Therefore, why should I even try to compete? Because I know I can't meet the standard that exists. So I'm not going to worry about it.
Well, I love that you were like, I'm not going to worry about it because that's great. Because I definitely was the opposite. I was like, I don't look like that and I should. And so then I desperately tried
Yeah. So then it was my number one focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think it's so interesting. And we hear this from a lot of guests. And I think it's, I hear from a lot of clients. And so this idea of it really is around puberty, you know? Yeah. And that's for sure when it happened for me, you know, like 11, 12 years old. And that's when it really starts. Cause yeah, you're thinking about like dating or boyfriends and girlfriends, right? In like middle school or whatever. And it's like, all of a sudden, these messages are really amplified in the TV shows and all of that. And so it's like, even if we do grow up in households that don't stress those things or doesn't have, you know, diet chatter or, you know, isn't very looks focused, unfortunately, we're living in this world that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's something about us as humans. We want to be attractive
yeah.
to other humans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I don't mean it in a sexual way. I just mean right. we want to attract other humans, right?
Yeah.
That's what we do. We're pack animals. So we want more people in our pack. What's interesting is at what point do we absorb those lessons about what does it mean to be attractive?
Mm.
Does being attractive mean that you're strong? Does being attractive mean that you're soft? Does being attractive mean that you're welcoming? Or does being attractive mean that you're challenging? And we all have different experiences. But as we get out into the world and puberty, I think there's something about kids, especially, you know, we look for things that are different
mm-hmm.
and yeah. we compare ourselves to the things that are different. And there is that tendency to then think that different is bad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's like we get so caught up in society having this like one ideal, right? As you said, it's like, well, there's this one way to be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this one way to be attractive. And that's where the damage comes, mm-hmm. right? When it's just like this one way. And if we aren't that, then we're not attractive. Instead of backing up and being like, wait, we can be attractive to other people in so many ways, whether it's your energy, you know, your personality, your humor, your intelligence, or the way you look. And the way you look can be in a variety of ways, right? And I think we forget sometimes that, you know, we have so many people in this world and they all are attracted to different kinds of people, you know? And like, that's a beautiful thing. And yet it's so funny that we all like grow up thinking, no, there's just one way. I have to be this way in order to be
yes.
attractive to somebody.
Yeah. And I blame the ancient Greeks. And specifically, just mostly for everything. You know, usually I blame the ancient Greeks, but specifically Plato. So this idea that there's a Platonic ideal of everything.
Oh.
And that everything on earth is trying to be that Platonic ideal. Like there's
right.
this Platonic ideal of a chair,
yeah.
the perfect chair. And everyone who makes chairs spends their entire life trying to make the perfect chair.
Yeah.
And that just assumes that there's one blueprint.
Yes.
And that we're all trying to fit into that one blueprint, which is just not the way the world is created.
Right.
Well, it defies any logic.
Yeah.
But somehow we buy into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's funny because that brings me back to, I was reading Fearing the Black Body by Dr. Sabrina Strings. And she talks a lot about the history of, you know, the ideal of, you know, beauty and all of that. And it's so funny because I was reading it and there's all these, you know, like scientists or mathematicians and whatever that were trying to discover what is like the equation for like ideal beauty. And just sitting there like, why? Like who cares? You know what I mean? Like, why are you trying to figure out like what like the mathematical equation is for like human beauty? I'm just like
get a hobby.
Right. I'm like, why? Why were we like, why did that matter? Like, why was that a thing you were studying?
But the thing is, because we do care.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, if I were to take a Sharpie to your t-shirt, it would say, I wish that I didn't care if you think I'm pretty.
Right.
You know, because it's a little like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, the answer to the ultimate question about life, the universe, and everything is 42.
Mm-hmm.
But they forgot to ask what the question was. Right. So they spent years and years and years developing a machine to give us the answer, but now they don't know what 42 means. It's like we spend all of this time trying to figure out what the ultimate beauty is,
yeah.
but we've got the wrong question.
Yeah.
That's so huge.
Oh,
she's
man.
Deep.
We've got the wrong question.
We've got the wrong question.
So what would a better question be?
I'm going to kick it to Lara.
Oh, the better question would be, what all comprises beauty, which is what we're here talking about.
What all comprises beauty. I love that.
And I used to think about this all the time growing up when I would be so hypercritical of myself when I would look in the mirror. I had fairly bad acne. I was thin, but not according to me.
Yeah. Oh,
I was always lived in a small
yes,
body, but
yeah.
not by the size zero girl standard that was next to me. So definitely had a really negative relationship. I'll be dating myself. Haley may remember because we're the same age. Before the internet, DVD player. Like,
I was there.
We remember.
I was there. I'm 30 years old. I was there.
We're the edge. We're the last. I remember the very first like gateway computer, like the cow box.
Yeah.
I remember the dial-up of AOL.
Oh, like, that was my golden age. I loved AOL.
I could say Haley and I are fortunate enough to have gone all through college.
Yeah, now that is wild to me. Yeah. I can't imagine.
People literally just stopped by your apartment and knocked on the door. Wild. People left you notes. Handwritten notes.
Yes.
Hey, stop by. You weren't home. If somebody called, like the first thing you would do... No, let me rephrase that. When you got home, the first thing you would ask your roommates is, did anyone call me?
Oh my God.
Could you imagine?
Like,
these questions aren't asked anymore.
Right.
Well, yeah. Like when I was younger, you would have to call and ask somebody's parent if they were home.
Right.
Like, calling a boy's house and being like, is he home? I'm like, kids today have no idea how stressful it was.
It's true. So there was this book that Jane Fonda put out, this exercise book. Do you remember this?
I do.
And my mom had bought it. For what reason, I'm not sure. And I got a hold of it when I was 11. She would hear me up in my room doing all the exercises, banging around. But even at 11, I had this very strong understanding that my body was not okay.
Yeah.
Now, I am very grateful for one thing, and I'm not sure why this happened. My boobs have been the same size since sixth grade. They just never quite grew. And I never cared.
Yeah.
And I would always think about, like, why do I feel zero insecurity about that? But I feel insecurities about all, like, why am I okay with that? Mm-hmm. But that this other stuff is simply not all right with me.
Yeah.
So I think a lot about that. But Haley said that she grew up in an environment where other things were valued. And she got a lot of messages from her parents that there was a lot more to her than her physical appearance. Mm-hmm. I did not get that message.
Yeah.
I got a very strong message at home that being pretty was damn fucking important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to attract a boy that I liked, I better look the part, right? I better look the part, the part.
Yeah.
So I definitely got comments about what I ate and I definitely got encouragement to go exercise more, even though I exercised nonstop.
Yeah.
So that was a very prevailing message. And it's sort of like, I always say I want to write a book that's the title is, if I lived in that house, my life would be great. Like, do you ever like walk your dog and see a house and you think, oh my gosh, that house.
Yes.
Oh, if I lived there, then I'd be happy, right? And it's sort of the same idea with our body. It's like our bodies are our houses. So, ooh, if I lived in her body, then life would be aces.
Life would be aces in one way and terrible in another, right? It's like that the first line of Anna Karenina.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, all happy families are happy in the same way. Isn't it? But all unhappy families are unhappy in different ways.
Right.
Yes.
Like I do think, like I remember about the same time you found the Jane Fonda book, I discovered pants. And my dad used to be, this is one of the great sad memories for my father, is every year he used to buy me a dress for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Like a pretty dress for Christmas. And one year I opened up the dress and declared that I wanted pants. And at somehow I had absorbed this idea that being a girl or being girly was somehow less than, you know? And that was probably because if I were to psychoanalyze myself, if I believed that being smart, being educated, you know, achievement was something that was attractive, then being girly, because the universe was telling me men do that, then somehow being girly or wearing a dress must put me in some other category in which I know I can't compete. So I'd rather compete with the boys and wear pants.
Wow. This is getting into so much, right? That there's like this one way of being.
Yeah. Right. But also varying degrees of being girly.
Right.
Right. And why do we want to be girly? Why do we not want to be girly? Like Haley got the message of, well, I don't want to be girly because I want to do all these other things.
Yeah.
And I can't do those things if I'm busy and focused doing that. Where I got the message under the umbrella of girly of being sexy.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, there's many, many, many varieties on sexiness, right? For me, it was never tight dresses and high heels and long, like, or that's just one variation on what somebody might think is sexy.
Yeah.
For me, it was more like the hippie look.
Yeah.
You know, the long hair. Yeah. Like there was just like, we get these ideas in our head about what has value.
Yes.
And then you kind of look around and say, well, these are the people I'm finding attractive. this is what I'm drawn to. So let me try to be a little bit more like that because that's what I want to bring back my way, which makes sense mm-hmm. on a lot of levels. But yeah. it also totally distracts us from really focusing on other much bigger things.
Right.
And I know as a young woman, I spent far too much of my time focusing on my outer appearance and I was miserable yeah. on yeah. the inside.
Right.
Absolutely miserable. And I just have this crusade that I want to see this younger generation, including y'all, grow up and out of that being the top priority.
You know what's so yeah. interesting as I listen to you talk is these two truths are coexisting simultaneously. One, that we all believe and strive for to attain this one idea of beauty. Mm-hmm. And yet it creates as many different ideas of what that is and isn't as there are people on the planet.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
So your idea of what was beautiful or was not beautiful was completely different than my idea of what was and was not beautiful.
That's right.
And yet we were both motivated by the same untruth of yeah. there is one thing that we both need to be
That's
working
right.
for.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Remember, I distinctly remember thinking in middle school that I was always brunette and like, I was like, I have to be blonde. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like a blonde cheerleader. Otherwise, who am I? You know, I'm like,
why do I live?
I will never be loved. Like, I will never have the boyfriend. Like, I will never be like, I just always remember thinking that. Like, I always remember thinking that. You know, it's like I have to look this very, yeah, like a certain way.
And that's something about being human, too.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
just something about wanting the thing that we don't have. Yes. Like the houses yeah. that you walk past.
That's true.
You know? And when I was a preteen, one of my favorite bands was the Thompson Twins. And the lead singer of the Thompson Twins had the most majestic hair.
I loved his hair.
Her hair. No, it was blonde, bleach blonde, bottle blonde. And tall and enormous in the way that only 80s hair can be.
Oh, yeah.
And as you can tell, looking at me, my hair does not do that. I do straight hair. That's yeah. all I do.
Yeah.
And I went into, I think I begged my mom to take me to the, you know, to a hair salon. And I brought in, you know, a picture that I'd cut out from a magazine of this lead singer from the Thompson Twins. And I said, I want to look like this. And she said something to the effect of, honey, there isn't enough bleach in the world for me to damage your hair enough to look like that. Like, and it was devastating to me.
Yeah.
That it's, moment, realizing yeah. I can never be that.
Right, oh, right.
It's so funny because my sister just said, I would have done well in the 80s. My hair is huge. And my mom and my sister have even bigger hair than me. And my sister and I were just saying this to each other, like, oh, we're so glad it's not like when I was younger in like the early 2000s when like plastered to your head, straight hair was the move.
Right.
And I used to just like flat iron the shit out of my hair and it would always get bigger. But it was that like I wanted it to be what it was supposed to be. That like
those were my days. I had arrived.
But it was like I worked so hard for that and it was never there because I meant to have big ass hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. It's that always like wanting to have what you don't have and what is like quote unquote in at the time. It gets so deeply into you. The things that we do.
And it's like, I want to point out here, you know, one of these truths is that we can often feel like some beauty ideals are fact.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, oh, this is how to be beautiful. Like, these are the ideal qualities, you know, or traits that you have if you're beautiful. But as we can see, just from this conversation, that they're not fact. Like, they yeah. change. Right? They ebb and flow. Like, for you, it was like you wanted the big hair and Steph was like, ah, I want like the, right? And so we can see in just this example, in this conversation, like, none of these things are fact. And as, yeah. you know, the cliche goes, like, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder, right? Yeah. It's like, we each have our own different things that we find beautiful in other people. But I love bringing it back to the question that we said, like, what's the better question? It's you said, like, what was the exact phrasing, Lara? It was like,
what brilliant thing did I say? what are all the qualities that comprise beauty?
Yes, that.
Yeah.
So have you all ever read The Four Agreements?
Yes.
I have not, but it's on my list.
Steph, put it up there.
I've not only read it, but I've been to a couple of your classes that were themed on The Four Agreements.
Yes, ma'am. And I do talk about it incessantly. And I'm a therapist. And so I use this book a lot with my therapy clients. But what they discuss in the book, other than the main four agreements, which are to be impeccable with your word, to take nothing personally, to assume nothing, and to do your best. Mm. But the impeccability of word is really tough because it has to do with the thoughts in our head.
Yeah.
So going back to Julie's example of, I better be a fucking blonde and a cheerleader or my life is completely meaningless. Like to her at that time, that felt so true.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so what do you do when the thoughts in your head are simply not true, but you believe them and you know them in every ounce of your fiber, as well as you know your own name. And then how do you combat that? Because it feels true to you.
Right.
So it's constantly questioning the stories in our head and the validity of those stories and trying to figure out, do I just wish that was true, but deep down I know it's not? And am I also just maybe saying what I think someone else wants to hear? Am I showing somebody, you know, visibly with my outer appearance what I think they want to see?
Yeah. Yes. I was just yesterday at my in-laws for dinner and their next door neighbor is she 4 years old maybe? And that with like little kid age because like I don't have kids, right? So I'm like, she's four. She's right. A small little human.
Between 4 and 14.
Yeah. Can't drive yet. So probably four.
But she's at the age where she keeps asking why to everything. Why is this like this? Why is this like this? Why? Right? And like we're in the backyard having dinner and she's just over there like asking all the questions of why? And I was like, man, Sid, like if you could just keep asking that your whole life, you're going to be in really good shape. Like keep questioning everything. Question everything. Yeah. You know?
And you know what the problem is? Adults.
Yes.
We are the problem. Talking about this little girl reminded me of my college boyfriend, who is a very tall, very beautiful Black man, little dreads. And we went to college in NYU in New York City. And we were on the subway one day. I think I've told you the story, Lara. And he's sitting on the subway and across from him is a mother and a tiny little adorable tow-haired blonde girl. And she looks up at Chad and she says, "Why are you so black?" And the mother, of course,
oh my God,
just, you know, recoils in horror.
Yeah.
And begins to try.
The little kids.
I thought the mom said that. And I was like, oh my God. Like, okay. Sorry, this is a whole different context.
This is a whole different story.
I got to work on my delivery.
I thought the mom said that.
Sorry, there was a hard stop and then a new paragraph there.
Got it.
I forgot to hit the return key.
So the child asked the question.
Blonde child looks up and says, "Why are you so black?" And then the mother recoils in horror and tries to explain it away. But Chad, before addressing the mother, addresses the little girl and says, "I'm just lucky, I guess." Mm. And she replies with, "Yeah."
Oh!
Wow. Okay. And you can imagine that little girl went home that night and said, Dad, I saw this guy. He was so black. It was amazing. Can I be black when I'm older? Like, I want to be that black." Like, she was just full of wonderment and curiosity and saw beauty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But her mother.
Right.
Probably spent 25 minutes that night trying to explain race relations, you know, to a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
When all she really needed to say was, "Yes, that was, he's really pretty, isn't
he? Yeah. Yeah.
So we create the problems both with our own preconceived notions of what beauty is or truth is, but also in trying to explain things away.
Yeah.
And I agree with Haley that adults are the problem, but we're also the solution. We can change our minds.
Yeah.
And we can say, "That was fucked up."
Yeah.
"And I'm going to operate differently now because I know better."
Yeah.
And so when I think about the messages that, you know, young people are getting, and I'm specifically going to focus on girls for the moment, but that young girls get about their body size, their skin, the way they dress, the way their hair is, all these things, it is adults who are responsible with sending their kids a different message. So I do really love this trend, and I'm definitely committed to this trend of, I don't comment on people's looks anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I might say, "I really dig your shirt, I want to buy one."
Yeah.
But that's not you. That happens to be something you chose to put on your body.
Yes.
You know? And I think that the more we steer away from commenting and focusing on other people's looks, that may send a very different message. Telling somebody, "Wow, that was a really intelligent thing you just said," or, "God, you really made me think," or, "You are an amazing dancer." Like focusing on who we actually are, what we offer to the world versus our external, I think is going to do a really powerful thing.
Absolutely. We say it on here all the time, but like the way you look is the least interesting thing about you.
That's right.
And, you know, for me as a photographer who I work in like a visual industry, but I see beauty as so much more than just your outward appearance. Like, you know, I say, we've said it on the podcast before, but like I said at one of our live events, your body is just the Tupperware for your soul. It's just what keeps you safe and allows you to like move through the world and do everything you're going to do. And I think it is. It's such an important thing to empower the younger generation with, of understanding that your beauty does not just come from having one specific way that you look or that your body looks or your size. It comes from the way that you carry yourself in the world and the things you do and the things that light you up and all these things. And it's like, I can see beauty in any human and every human because we all have these things inside of us that like light us up from the inside, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something about starting with yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, so Lara and I met because I went to her yoga classes. So
that's how I know everybody.
Same here.
And within about 5 minutes, I thought, yeah, we're going to be friends.
Yeah.
I like this woman because a lot of the messages that you were delivering and that you continue to deliver in those classes is just make a new agreement with yourself, to use the language of the four agreements. Like you make agreement, we make agreements with ourselves as well. Mm. And allowing yourself to not try to push to be the best, not trying to push to get into the pose, not trying to look just like everyone else in the room or be as good as everyone else in the room, that you are okay where you are. And I've always really appreciated the way you, the way you approach that in your teaching and also in your coaching.
Well, thank you. But I have to admit, that was not always true. When I first started out as a teacher,
same.
I wanted my classes to be the hardest fucking class you ever taught, as complicated as humanly possible. I reveled in what I was able to do and then also attached a value to that.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of values that we attach that actually damage us. Would I have been the exact same person if I couldn't do crow pose? For those listening, it's an arm balance. And a lot of people get really emotional about that posture. The first time I ever saw it in a class, I thought, this teacher is an asshole. Like, why in the world is he teaching something that clearly nobody's going to be able to do? And then I looked around the room. I'm like, oh shit, everyone's doing this pose. So two things happened. I had to question my own reality of like, I automatically assumed because I saw something I couldn't do, that therefore it was not really all that doable.
Right.
And B, then I attached a lot of value to this thing I couldn't do. Just like you were saying, Steph, we attach so much value to the physical attributes we don't have. The house that's different than our house, right?
Yeah.
And it's this constant source of suffering. So it took some major soul searching on my part to try to figure out like, okay, I have this platform. You have a platform when you teach yoga. Mm-hmm. And you have this opportunity to send a message. And I realized like, I'm sending some fucked up, very contradictory, hypocritical messages. So,
but now your classes are basically Lara saying, and that emperor's naked and that emperor's naked. And you're probably naked too. Like just showing where it's a truth or where it's a norm.
Yeah.
And calling norms for what they are. Just because this is a norm does not mean it's truth.
Yo,
and doesn't mean it needs to be your truth.
That's right. And I do think like kind of to circle it back to the relationship with aging is buying into the belief that you're only attractive if you look young. If you look at us, if you look younger than fill in the blank, 30, 35, whatever it might be. But constantly having to question our beliefs and then how we behave as a result of those beliefs, to me, is the road towards acceptance of the things you can't change and then focusing on developing ourselves in completely other ways and also redefining what we think is beautiful.
Right.
I think it's beautiful when my hips don't hurt.
Yeah.
But really?
You know, I think it's beautiful when my knees are cooperating with me. Like, and that's something we talk a lot about. Actually, Haley, we have a lot of really deep conversations.
We specialize in it.
And I usually need a nap after we hang out just because I've mentally really worked hard to keep up with this one over here. But we talk a lot about all the shoulds.
Yes.
Oh,
how many shoulds all of us operate under. Mm-hmm. And it's really more of a matter of asking, what could I do in this situation? What choices do I have?
Oh, I love that simple reframe.
Yeah.
From should to could. Again, it's the quality of the questions that we're asking. Like that's what it keeps coming back to, right? It's like, well, what questions are we asking? Is it the right question to be asking?
Yeah.
And so this, it's like, should I? Could I? Or could, you know, like what are the other possibilities out here? Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And I think yes. as older women, I think we have a responsibility, I think, to ask those questions and to demonstrate that there are different answers.
Yes. Mm.
Because we've both walked the earth for 50 years.
We're 49.
Well, that means
not that
we've been on the earth for 50 years. So we I think, are at that point in our life where it's important that we make those choices mm-hmm. and that we be verbal about the choices that we're making.
Yes.
Because I know as a young woman, I looked at older women as models. Mm-hmm. What are they doing? So yeah. when I started in the corporate retail world, I looked around and I thought, okay, the most powerful women in the room all have enormous handbags and very, very tall shoes. So clearly, if I want to get ahead in this business, I need very tall shoes and an enormous
shot.
Right? And it's going to live on the seat next to me on the plane. So that, you know, so we pick up these cues yeah. from around us of not just what's the norm, but what is valued. And so I think there's something wonderful about women visibly and verbally rejecting norms. And doing it over and over and over again. Mm, and you yes. do that. And I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Haley. I like, this is what I'm really confused about. Help me out, younger generation. Yeah. Why are we so afraid of the words, I was wrong?
Oh,
why is there so much power attributed to being right? I live for acknowledging where I've been wrong, because then that's going to lead me down a pathway that feels more right. And there's not one right.
Yes.
Like
yes.
Steph, you're a photographer. Julie, you teach yoga, spinning, and you're an intuitive eating coach, yes. and you're a podcaster, a really, really effective podcaster, both of you. Haley is an entrepreneur. She has had numerous careers. She has started organizations after organization, currently the Matriots, which I know we want to talk
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
And I have reinvented myself over and over again. So they're all just options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We could decide, I'm going to let go of all of these things and do something different. So we really, really, really do wind up limiting ourselves, both visually and internally, by not considering that there's always another option.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like we latch on to what we think makes up our identity
yes.
in terms of like how we look and then how we think and how we operate. And so I think one of the best things ever is when we can, you know, be really like real with ourselves. And I mean, like what you were saying earlier, like the beginning of your teaching, I was the same way at the beginning when I started teaching classes for the first time. If you looked at who I was being then and the messages that I was giving out in my classes, they were a complete 180 of what I say and do now. You know, and I can look back and be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Like, that wasn't a great message to be giving out in my classes. But like, I didn't at that time. I meant well. I was doing the best that I could. Now that I know better, right? I do better in my classes. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the beautiful thing. And can we accept that? I mean, as I keep growing and living on this earth, I'm going to keep learning more and more stuff. And I'm sure I'm going to look back to this time in my life and be like, oh, I thought that then. That wasn't correct.
Exactly.
You know, and yeah. can we be okay with that?
Like, well, I think I know that I hear this a lot from clients or women who want to like, make a change in their life or something like that, where we get attached to like a previous idea of ourselves or this like, well, this is what I always wanted. This is what I've been working for, whatever, whatever. And it's like, obviously, the longer that you are here on the planet, you're going to gain new information. You're going to constantly meet new people and have new experiences and learn new things. And so your perspective is going to shift and change, and what you want from life could shift and change with that. But we hold on so tightly because we're so afraid of being wrong. We're so afraid of having made the wrong choice.
Right.
But it's like, but if it was right for you then, but that doesn't mean that it could still be right for you now. It's okay to admit that you've changed and you've adjusted what you want.
Right. And changing our minds is something that's inevitable.
Yeah.
We're presented with new information or new circumstances, or change is kind of fostered upon us. Mm-hmm. Say somebody loses their job.
Yeah.
Then they have no choice. Maybe all along they've been thinking like, I really want to do something different with my life, but you know, this is comfortable and I get a paycheck and I need the health insurance. And then all of a sudden they've lost their job, which so many people are struggling with right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, for so many, no matter how hard they look, it's going to be difficult to find work. But for some of the lucky few, it might present as this opportunity to make a change they wanted to make and they just didn't want to admit, maybe I want to go in a different direction.
Yeah. Right.
But I feel like if we can keep encouraging each other, that saying the words, I'm wrong, has so much power. There's nothing weak about that. There's so much strength in saying, oh, I think I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
It's this actually, is where I'm at now.
Yeah. It's actually like saying you're wrong is actually just opening a new door.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. It's not closing yourself off to something. It's opening something new.
But
yeah.
As much as we're trying to teach the younger generation to not put so much value on their looks and also not subscribe to a certain way that they believe they need to look, also helping them understand you're going to change your mind a lot.
Yeah.
And you're going to keep learning things that's going to help you land in a, wow, I think I was really wrong about A, B, C, and D, and E possibly as well.
Totally.
Because having those insights and making changes as a result of insights is kind of the great thing about being alive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Like,
right.
Sure. Right. If none of us ever changed,
how boring.
Like, if
how
we
boring.
Were always yeah. right about everything,
yeah.
Like maybe self-satisfying, but like boring.
Lame.
Boring.
Lame.
Lame. Lame is a great word.
You can't
for
grow
lame.
That way. There's it's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's there's something, you know, as humans, we change from before we're born, right? From the moment the little embryos start to come together, we are in a constant state of change.
Yeah.
And as human beings, if we stop changing, we atrophy and we die.
Yeah.
But change is in itself a destructive process. You know, we're cells are dying in our body every day and we're regenerating
yeah.
new ones. And that's how we get to continue to live. So
right.
if we think about ideas like cells, some of them need to die so that new ones can be born.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that we can grow.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
You see?
Yes. Abso-freaking-lutely. And it's like, this is where I feel like we truly can get to this place of being so much more like liberated in our lives. If we can really lean into change, you know, mm-hmm. like the more we grasp to like stay the same or like regret, right? The more we're going to struggle because you're right. Change, we're always changing. We're always growing. Like it's just part of life. And I think when I talk to my clients about like body acceptance, I'm like, we need to not attach ourselves to how our bodies look because the fact of the matter is, right? Over the course of life, our bodies will change and ebb and flow in different seasons of life. And so if we can accept that change is the norm. Change is what's going to happen.
Constant.
Right. The only constant is change. We just make our lives so much easier.
Absolutely. And yeah. more efficient.
Right.
Like there's an efficiency aspect to this as well because
yes.
it takes so much energy.
Yes.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting
yeah.
to try to hold on to things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the liberation that you mentioned, Julie, that comes along with it. Isn't that what we all want?
Yes.
Yeah. Liberation and freedom.
Yes.
Okay. We'll bring a little yoga philosophy into this shit. So there's a term in yoga. It's one of the yamas, I believe. I should probably know this. It's called a parigraha.
Yes.
And so Julie's familiar and Haley's familiar. I don't know if you're familiar with
stuff. I don't do yoga, sorry.
No apology necessary, yo. It means non-grasping or
yes.
non-hoarding. And this is one of the observances in life is that it causes us to suffer. And that's really the long and short of what we're all
yeah.
saying over here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The whole idea of, oh, I'd be happier if I lived in her house. Like,
yes.
It's scarcity mindset, which is like what we're all programmed with. It's like, oh, once I have that, then I'll be happy. Once I look like this, then I'll be happy. Once I'm in that house, then I'll be happy. Instead of, and that keeps us actually, right, from being happy. That keeps us trapped.
Right.
Where true liberation is, wow, look at all that's around me right now.
And
even when things aren't perfect, it's like, but look what I do have. These people in my life, you know, just like seeing
best
the abundance.
Yes.
You know, I was reading a book about this and the teacher, the author was like, think about abundance as if like you're in a field of like infinite flowers and you're just there. Like it's already there, whether you can see them or not. Like you do live in this space of infinite abundance. It's like whether our eyes are open to it and we're open to that truth. But how many of us live not even seeing the flowers? We don't see the field. We have no idea that that's the truth.
Well, and this year, I feel like we've been forced to see the field.
Mm.
So it's such a remarkable year for that kind of insight to have occurred. people saying, I never realized there were so many birds at my house. Or I didn't realize how... I was talking with someone last week who his wife has lost her job. They've got a young son. It's been COVID. There's racial unrest, all this stuff happening. And I asked him, how was your summer? And he said, actually, it's been great. And then he paused and laughed and said, I can't believe I just said that. But we diagnosed it as he's had the whole summer at home with his family.
Yeah.
They've had more time together. They've spent time in the backyard. They've watched the flowers grow. And there's something about the immediacy that we've all been forced to live in for the last 6 months that there was a New York Times writer who coined the infinite present. And we've all been forced in some ways to live in the infinite present. We can't plan our next vacation.
Yeah.
We can't plan our next, most of us, our next job move. We're not looking ahead 6 months or 12 months or 2 years or 5 years because we have no idea what the world is going to look like then. So it's forcing us in some ways to become more reflective and appreciate the field that we're in and maybe see flowers that were always there that we didn't have the ability to see before because we were looking 300 yards ahead of the field.
And the redefinition that comes along with that, like what is fun now? What is socializing? What is travel? All the things that we have to reconsider.
And I love what I'm seeing and hearing from so many of my clients who are women. They've stopped coloring their hair.
Yes.
They've stopped getting their nails done. They've stopped wearing high heels. I had a client last week that said, I had to go somewhere. I put on high heels. My feet were like, hell no.
Oh my God.
Take those off.
What are you, doing?
She said, I haven't worn anything but flip-flops for 6 months. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how much of these insights that we've had we're going to take into the new world of the next couple of years and how much we will... I hope we don't slide back to before times.
I don't think we can, Haley. I don't even think it's possible because I think this whole year has been so impactful and it's just, it won't stop coming.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, my insomnia is all about the wildfires going on out west. And last week, it was about racial injustice. And it's like, it just won't stop. So when you get this kind of barrage of having your eyes pried open and no one's going to let them shut, I don't know that there is any going back.
Yeah.
Which is, not a bad thing in that
way. Which is how we shouldn't go back, right?
No.
Like, we need to have our eyes wide open so that we can see the full breadth of what's happening and then hopefully decide to be in action, right? And be a part of the solution.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing from pretty much all of my therapy clients is they are recognizing what I thought mattered before, I realize does not now. And that is so huge. All of us reconsidering our value systems, what we hold near and dear.
Absolutely.
There's a massive crisis of meaning.
That's a good sentence.
You know, I thought it was an identity crisis, but it's really a crisis of meaning. And I'm seeing this with my clients. So customers are looking at businesses and saying, why do I give you my money?
Wait, what do you stand for?
Who are you? What do you stand for? What are you doing about all these things?
If
you're not doing something about it, then I am going to go somewhere else.
That's right.
We're looking at people in our lives and thinking, well, if I can only have a small number of people in my bio.
Oh my God.
You know, are you biome worthy or not?
It's so hard.
Are you
biome
worthy or not? Speak up.
So I know that one thing we really wanted to talk to you guys specifically about, you came here and you're like, let's talk about aging. Like, let's get into the, so like, let's talk more about it. Because I mean, Steph and I, obviously, like, we're limited by our own experience. And I'm 29, Steph is 30. So like, we're limited to like these 30 years. And so we're so excited to have you guys here to like bring this conversation to life. Hey guys, Julie here. You probably know by now that I'm pretty passionate about this whole anti-diet space. And I also totally get that you might have a lot of questions about giving up dieting or about intuitive eating. Like, well, what about my health? Or, you know, why doesn't dieting work? I don't get it. Because we've grown up in this world that tells us that diets do work and that we all should be a certain size. So I have something just for you. It's my free masterclass, How to Break Up with Dieting for Good. It's going to bust diet culture's three biggest lies. I'm going to invite you into the research, the truth, the real science that shows what happens to our bodies on a diet and why you didn't fail the last diet, the diet failed you. In this 60-minute masterclass, I'm going to give you all the tools and confidence you need to break up with dieting for good. So check it out on my website, julieolemacher.com. I cannot wait to see you in the masterclass.
The two of you and really so many women in your generation give me so much hope. I was nothing like y'all when I was 29 or 30. I wasn't questioning. I wasn't not putting up with certain things going on in society. I was going along and getting along and just very, very, very busy hating myself on all kinds of levels. And it's so inspirational to see that the women today who are 29 and 30 are like, fuck that shit. And I make the rules and I call the shots and you will not tell me what to believe or how to feel about myself. I will.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a phrase I'm going to use, and I don't mean to use it in a political sense, but it is what it is, is a phrase that I probably lived by through most of my 20s. Mm. Like, well, I don't agree. This isn't right, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I lived in a space where I thought things were truth when they were norms. Mm-hmm. So I even if I had insights that these are norms, they're not truths. It isn't right. I didn't actually think I could change it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Not really recognizing your power.
The power to change it. And I didn't realize, which is one of the things I'm also so grateful for women of your generation, is that I could just vote with my feet.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I knew how to boycott products. You know, my mother taught me that. You know, don't buy anything from China. That was her thing. You know, anything. She would look at the label of everything we bought. Oh, it's from China. You know, she was so worried about human rights. So I knew how to boycott a product, but I didn't know how to boycott a company. I didn't know that I was a valuable product and that by walking away from a job, I could actually protest. Mm-hmm. And I was able to say, actually, this place isn't right. And I'm just going to walk away from it and find something better. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing your generation do just that, even interviewing young women coming to me and saying, well, tell me about your benefits. Tell me about your flex time here at the company. And how are you going to support me when I become a young mother? How will that work? And how much flexibility will you give me? And recognizing that they were asking those questions, not because they'd hoped that maybe I had a policy, but that if I didn't, they weren't taking the job.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah.
Where we would definitely never have asked those kind of questions.
Or if we did, we would say, gosh, I really hope they do, but you know, I can't demand it.
No, I definitely had the impression that they were picking me versus I was choosing them. Mm. And I had that impression a lot of times with men I dated, the ones who pursued me.
Oh, my gosh.
If they were choosing me, I didn't get to say no. And I can actually make an effort in that direction. So just that power of choice versus just being told, these are your options, and that's that.
Yeah. One of my favorite phrases is no thank you.
No thank you.
No thank you.
Because you know, pleasing people, making people feel welcome, wanting to support people and help people is one of my greatest strengths and also one of my greatest weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So learning to say no is a lifelong obsession with me. I need to do better at it. But the idea that I could say no, comma, thank you, period. And that was an acceptable thing. I didn't have to explain it.
Right.
Yeah, that it's a full sentence.
It's a full
sentence.
No thank you is a full and very polite sentence.
Yes. Oh my God. The power in not explaining yourself.
Oh,
yeah.
What was it? Alicia Keys. And I think she regretted this. I'm just going to speak for Alicia.
Feel free. I think she's fine with that. Friend of the pod, Alicia Keys. Please feel free. She's a listener.
How hilarious that'd be if you get an email being like, that was funny, y'all.
I would die.
So Alicia Keys had made this kind of proclamation that she wasn't going to wear makeup anymore.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
And, you know, she's like, I'm not going to hide my face. Like, she was having a moment where she was like, yeah, I'm not cool with this. But then there was a day where she felt like it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody called her on it. She's like, I do whatever I want.
Adam Levine.
Yeah,
yes. Adam Levine. This was in Untamed, I think. Did you read Untamed?
I didn't.
I know, I love it.
I know.
I don't think it's in Untamed, but I know that I read it somewhere.
It's some. Yeah, I just.
I'm not making
it
this
might
up.
Have been, it might have been in Untamed. It's our
Alicia,
favorite.
I'm trying
no, because
to say
she was just like, I do whatever the fuck I want.
Right.
Yeah.
Like for the most part, I'm abandoning makeup. But if I just feel like it one day, I'm gonna.
Well, and I think that's, again, like, I don't think that she regrets making that statement. I think she is just like, no, I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want to.
Right.
Like,
But what I was suggesting that she might regret is the feel of the need to explain.
The need to explain that she was gonna do that.
Just not wearing makeup sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. Or most of the time. And then other, and so I think that is like one of the biggest superpowers that we can really adopt. So like Haley said, during COVID and during lockdown, a lot of women have decided, I'm not going to color my hair anymore. It's too expensive. It's too much of a time commitment. And for those of us who are getting gray, and you know what? I don't care anymore. I can have some gray hair. Yeah. And I know she and I are, you know, it doesn't look like you have gray hair yet, but I have a little bit and I'm excited about it. Like that's one that I'm really looking forward to. But I found myself, like I'm doing right this moment, I found myself explaining the thought process. What was COVID? Kind of landed here and I'm starting to evaluate my own vanity. And instead of just like silently doing that, and you know what? If I change my mind in a year, it's my fucking business. I don't have to then yes. say, I know I said I wasn't going to do it and now I'm doing it. Like, and that's where so much yeah. of the shame comes in
yeah.
is this like feeling of everyone is owed an explanation for our actions. And also, sorry, I'm talking to Bluestream. Also, like I always land on like, I'm not that interesting. That everyone's sitting around being like, well, Lara's going to have to answer for that shit. Like, they're not right. thinking about me.
Like, why is she doing this now? She said.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But so, everybody's so wrapped up in their own shit that it's like, people are generally not thinking about us as no, much as we think they are.
If ever at all.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
why we're doing certain things. So just mm-hmm. that whole power, like Haley said, in saying no. I'm good with just no. I don't really even feel the need to add the thanks. She's much more polite than I am. Yeah. But also just not explaining ourselves yeah. to every damn body unless yeah. there's a good reason
right.
yeah.
to give somebody an explanation.
Right.
It affects their life.
Yeah. And it also made me think of just trying things out.
Yeah.
So when I look back on my early years in the workplace, there was what I will refer to as the pantyhose moment. Because one of my first jobs out of college was working in Washington, D.C., not a town known for fashion. Mm. And I wore a lot of very big, boxy blue suits with large buttons. It was like suddenly women. Upset.
Large buttons.
Large buttons. Yeah. Large buttons. Mostly gold. It was as if to be a woman working in Washington, you needed to look as much like a man as possible. Mm. Like just erase all of your femininity.
But then with a very large handbag?
Yeah, but with it, well, that was that retail. Retail's the very large handbag. Yeah. But in DC, everyone wore pantyhose. And I hated pantyhose. Yeah. It made me feel mm-hmm. like a sausage.
Yeah.
Like, why would I put a sausage casing on to go to work in August in Washington, D.C.
Right.
on what is effectively a paved swamp? Like, this, none of this feels good.
No.
And so one day, I just didn't wear
them. Oh my God.
And what happened? What?
Nothing.
You know what Shocking. Happened?
My knees got a breeze.
Knees? Oh, you could breathe all day.
I could breathe.
You could just breathe all day.
It was amazing. And nobody noticed. And it was my little silent protest.
Yeah.
Like I was told I needed to wear pantyhose, but I'm not going to. And that's me giving it to the man.
That is. I love it. That's a good story.
So great.
I love that. Yeah.
So if we just all stop doing something.
Yeah.
If we just
yeah.
all stop.
Just stop doing something that we actually hate doing, yes. but we do because, again, it's a should. Like, we think we should do it. We think we should wear pantyhose. We should wear something professional or whatever. Like, when I was younger, probably like a teenager, I don't know how this came to me, but I was just like, I just never want a job where I have to wear slacks. Like, I never want to own dress pants. I don't want to do it. And it has served me so well.
Yeah.
Because now I wear leggings and a crop top every day of my freaking life.
Every day, like, I am good. I think it's so important. And this like brings our conversation, you know, back to this idea of like, we want to talk about like Botox and things like that. Intention is everything,
yeah.
right? Like why we're doing what we're doing. Like Alicia Keys can wear no makeup or she can be like, no, I want to wear makeup. And she gets to do that. Right?
Because it's
like,
what she wants.
Exactly. Like, I mean, with like hair color, like that's like the one thing I'll like play with is hair color. Cause I like my long hair. I don't want to cut it. And so hair color is the one kind of fun way I can play
sure.
with it.
Yeah.
I never used to really play with it though. I was like so afraid. Like, what if it looks bad? Like, what if I do something and it looks bad? And then I'm ruined because I look bad.
You're ruined.
Right? No, but really, it was like, this could make or break me. It felt so like, God forbid, I make the wrong choice and then I look, then someone sees me, whatever, right? And then like, last year, I went pretty dark in the winter. And then just now, I'm the lightest I've ever been. I'm like, who the fuck cares? I don't care. Why not try? It's fun. Like, let's just like play with it and have fun with it and like just see. Right? And so it's like these things you can see like the different mindset behind it. Before I was like, oh God, I had to look this way. It's like my value is entrenched in like how I look to others. And now it's like, no, I can choose to color my hair or not because it's fun. Because it's just like an experiment. Like, oh, let's see what this looks like. And no attachment.
No attachment.
You know, being so rooted in our value and in our worth, that there's no attachment.
Yeah. And being able to look at yourself in the mirror after a particularly bad dye job and say, well, that didn't work.
Yeah. Not digging that.
Not doing that one again.
But like, but being okay with things that. On.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying things on. And yeah, I mean, it is fun. And we get to change our minds.
Yeah.
I'm pretty renewed in my commitment to not over explaining things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do what feels good to us. And what feels good to us, like everything else, will change.
Yeah.
At some point, you might be sick of the hair color.
Right.
And decide, you know what? I do want to cut it.
Yeah.
And who knows? And it's all up to you. And like, these all sound like surface things, but they're all a part of our identity.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it comes back to, again, like the longer you're on the planet and the more people that you know and the more experiences you have, the way that you feel about yourself and what you want, and that can apply to what you look like, your hair color, your whatever, like can change. And I think it's an interesting thing to attach also to aging, because I know as women, like we are taught to value youth and to not think that we should change, that the way that we look should change as we get older. But that's literally what we're supposed to do,
right?
There's no
we're
way
made
around
to
it.
Do it.
We're made right. to
well,
do that.
And it's better than the alternative.
Right. Because that would be death.
Absolutely. Yes. But the thing about aging is that it's a universal truth.
Yeah.
You know, so genetically, not everyone will live in a bigger body. Some people will live in incredibly small bodies their whole life because genetically, that's what they got.
Absolutely.
So, skin color.
Yeah.
We will have the experience of having Caucasian skin. No other skin color will ever be something that we'll be able to experience.
Right.
Everybody, unless they pass away before they get older, everybody will experience aging.
Yeah.
And so again, genetically, everyone's going to experience aging a little bit different. Some people are going to get aches and pains in their body quicker than others. Some people are going to look older sooner than others. And I think there has to be a pretty hefty dose of acceptance in there, you know, figuring out where you're going to put energy. Maybe it's Botox, maybe it's hair color. I really like my rosehip oil, you know, but I'm not going to worry about the fact that my hands are very veiny and they didn't used to be, or that my chest is a little on the wrinkly side. Like, okay, that's the way it goes. So it's for each one of us to balance. Where am I going to direct my energy? And where am I going to just sit with acceptance? And also, and I hate to sound like it's a platitude at this point, but gratitude.
Right. Yeah.
Like, okay, my knees might be a little bit achy, but my shoulders feel good.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not having any distractions there.
Yeah.
So constantly redirecting ourselves back to, okay, abundance versus scarcity.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that really is the key behind aging, the abundance. I'm still alive. Still kicking.
Right.
I'm still walk on my own.
Absolutely.
Don't wear a diaper. You know, like the things that we're not having to contend with.
Yeah.
Yes.
Part of that, I think, is being self-confident and secure in yourself, of being able to say, well, I have these things, but I don't have these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as we get older, I was knowing that I was coming today, I was thinking a lot about aging in the workforce and what does it mean to be a woman, a working woman, or a woman in corporate America or in the business world as you get older, and how the insidiousness of our body culture and body dysmorphia makes its way right into the office where you think it shouldn't live. And I was thinking about this program that we put in place at one of the companies I worked with years ago that matched our oldest people in the workplace with some of our youngest. So our 60s and 70-year-olds with 20-year-olds.
Yes.
And it was a joint mentoring program. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't intended to be me, the executive, pulling you along, young whippersnapper, and showing you the ropes. And the conversations that were had in those meetings were so wonderful. I remember one senior executive coming back from his meeting and being super excited because he learned about podcasts. And he didn't know that they existed. And this was many years ago.
You gotta know about podcasts.
So, you know, and he'd gotten a list of podcasts. And then he had explained something about business to his young mentee. And it was this mutually wonderful relationship.
I love that.
So I think part of that change has to be both internal, of us looking at ourselves differently and saying, I'm grateful that my knees work because my shoulder hurts a little bit today. Yeah. But also as we look at other people and we interact with other people in our lives, recognizing that there's beauty and good in all variations.
Mm. Everybody has something of value to offer.
Yes.
I mean, the older generation can benefit so much from the younger generation's just constant exposure to tech because they can learn something from it, right?
Yeah.
Just off the top of my head. I was reading an article this morning I'd mentioned to y'all on super aging and how to be a super ager. I'm like, I definitely want to be a super ager. What do I got
to
do?
What is a super ager? You have to tell me.
I'd love to tell you, Haley. I'm also going to tell everybody listening. A super ager is somebody who is making the most of the number of years they've had to practice at life.
Oh,
and
I love
that's something I think all the time. Like, I've had 49 years to practice at being alive. Like, I hope I'm better at this than I was when I was, you know, 39 and so on.
You've just blown my mind.
So it's about like keeping yourself mentally sharp. But the most interesting part of this article was that sometimes it's got to be super uncomfortable. Like, you should feel tired afterward, like pushing yourself mentally. Sudoku's cool. You know, I love to play like backgammon and cribbage and bridge and all those card games and stuff. It does make you think, but like really pushing yourself to understand something that's just hard. It's hard to wrap your mind around and going there. And, you know, keeping your body active, but also recognizing like that might be too much, like using your discernment of what it is that you actually need. And the article is saying, and I believe it, that typically people that are older, 60 and up, are happier. They're less stressed. They have figured out what has value to them. They figured out what value they offer to those around them. And when you start to really connect with those ideas, you start to realize like, damn, I don't want to spend nearly as much of my energy on the outside. Like, yeah, I like looking cute and all, but I really want to like learn how to speak Chinese or, you know, what's the, there's so many different dialects in the
Mandarin
Chinese.
Or Cantonese.
Mandarin, that's the one I wanted, or Cantonese, yeah. So like deciding you're going to take yourself on in this way that you're like, oh, this is going to be really, really, really hard, but I'm going to do it.
Yes. What I love about that is that that entire idea of super aging is all about who you're being.
Yes.
And how you're being and how you're living and how you're showing up to like live and make the most of this life. Because usually when we hear talks about like super aging or not that term, but like aging gracefully or whatever it is, it's all about how you look.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's always what the conversation is. Like, how can we do this to look younger? It's like, well, I just want to feel great. Like, I just want to feel and be my best, right?
You know the one I hate the most? Do you remember the, are we allowed to call out product names?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. So this is a while ago, but Oil of Olay had a tagline that was, I'm not going to age gracefully. I'm going to fight it every step of the way. Like, that's where all of your energy should be going.
Yikes.
Fight it every step of the way. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do that. Like, I might use some face cream, but like, is that really where my fight needs to live?
Well, and that's a fight that you're going to lose.
You're going to lose.
Right.
You're going to lose it eventually.
Like, aging is inevitable and in the best way possible, right? Because like, if it's not, then like, you're dead. Every day we have is an extraordinary gift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, do I use moisturizer? Well, yeah, because like, it feels good to moisturize my face. My face feels dry, and so I'll use moisturizer. Right? But it's like, am I going to get wrinkles? Like, I'm going to.
You're and
like,
going
that's
to.
Like, again, like, why are we like, I'm going to fight it every... Why?
Right.
What? You're going to waste so much time and energy and stress over this like ridiculous fight.
Yeah. Why not fight to do something even better that you know you already know how to do, like get older?
Yeah.
I love this idea that like super aging, like I'm going to be the best old person ever.
Nobody's going to master
aging like me. I'm going to have young people run up onto to me on the street and ask to be my grandkid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be that cool. I'm going to ask super wise questions and then long pauses afterwards.
Exactly.
With meaningful glances.
Meaningful glances. I was
thinking
I got to develop my eyebrow raise and I kind of sustain it.
I'm just aging into my personality. Like, I feel like the older I get, the more I become myself.
And how cool is that?
And it's so cool. And like that book you have right there, it's one of my favorites. Yeah. I recommend it to every therapy client I have, is Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And so it's not misinterpreted. It's not that you don't care about anything. It's just that you don't care about every damn thing.
Right.
Right. And being very discerning about the fucks given.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's what you're saying, Steph, is that I'll just tell you what you're saying, Steph. Okay, I love doing that.
Please do.
You're welcome. Preemptively, you're welcome. Is that you're really adapting into your personality and it's yours.
Yeah.
You know, the other people can figure out what really lights them up and what they really want to put out to the world. And it's so much fun when you're not concerned with everybody approving you and liking you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's a shit show. And we've all lived it. We've all had those moments.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. So we've danced around it, but I want to talk like specifically about Botox. Since let's talk about it, right? Because we have not ever talked about it on the podcast. And I think it's a really great conversation to have because it is a very like normal thing these days for women especially to get. And there's nothing at all wrong with Botox. But I think it's a good conversation to have of like, let's be intentional with Botox. You know, because I think it can be a slippery slope to like the opposite of things that we're talking about in terms of like, oh, I have to get it. I have to look this way. I have to, you know, look young versus no, like maybe I want it because like I just want it. It's for me. It's cool. I don't care if you think I'm pretty, right? Like I want this for me and that's great, right? But I think there's a line there and it can be a good thing that you do for yourself and that's wonderful. But if it's attached to like these society's things of like you're only valuable if you look this way, that's when it's damaging, right?
Yeah. I want you to speak on it first, Haley.
So I'm very fortunate that I'm afraid of needles. So I will probably never have to ask myself, do I want to get Botox on my forehead? But I think for me, the question, whether it's Botox or it's augmenting your body in any way, is why are you doing it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For whom are you doing it?
Yes.
And then what are you giving up to do it?
Mm.
So we yes. all know people who will spend their last dollar on the hair salon, the nail salon, the Botox treatment. And they really don't have that dollar to spend because they've prioritized their external beauty so much above so many other things. It's damaging other parts of their life. It's like the definition of an addict, right? When do you know you have an addict? Well, when their addiction is damaging all of the other relationships in their life. So for me, that's the thing. You know, someone who says, I think I'm going to do it every once in a while. If I had a friend who would say, I did a little Botox, you told me, it's fine.
Yeah.
But if I knew someone was hurting themselves or putting themselves in danger to get it done, then I would say, ooh, that's probably some deeper thing that needs to be dealt with. Let me give you my friend Lara's card because you're probably going to want to talk with her.
Yes. Oh, thank you for that.
Why did I let her go first? Why'd I do it? So I love everything you said. So I get Botox, but here's the thing. I'm a spoiled little lady. My partner, Jason Kahn, is a dentist and he is extremely adept at offering Botox. And actually, it's really nice. He got into doing Botox. He learned to do it because his wife, his ex-wife now, obviously, she got horrible migraines.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to find a solution for her.
Yeah.
And so he had learned that Botox could be incredibly effective with that. It can also be incredibly effective with TMJ. And there's some really medicinal things.
Yeah.
And I wonder if like at any point down the road, we'll be talking about Botox like we're now talking about marijuana, you know, where there was so much stigma attached to it at one point. And then yet you're able to identify all these incredibly positive things it could offer somebody.
Yes.
I don't know. But I trust him implicitly. Yeah. And he feels like it's very safe.
Yeah.
And you know, I also get it for free. So not a lot of people are in my situation.
Yeah.
Would I get it if I didn't get it for free? Would I get it if Jason wasn't my partner? I don't know. Yeah. I've never been in that situation before. Maybe.
Yeah.
But he did give it. So I had it in January and then he just gave it to me a couple weeks ago. And he wanted to know if I wanted him to do my crow's feet. And I said, no, I like those. They show I'm a happy human being, right? Yeah, I smile all the time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, I had them do my forehead because I like how it looks.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'll either decide it's fine either way or I'll cut bangs or whatever the case may be. Yeah. But I think that if you are in the luxurious position, like Haley was saying, that you actually can afford it and it's something you want to do. If you're trying to eradicate every single solitary sign of aging on your face, you have that choice, but then there's the rest of your body and skin that's going to reflect a very different story. So understanding Botox doesn't solve everything. Coloring your hair doesn't solve everything. Exercise doesn't solve everything. Even nutrition doesn't solve everything, even though I think it solves a shit ton of things.
Right, right.
That there has to, it always goes back to it's going to happen anyway. And that things like Botox exist, just like all the other treatments out there. Exist and you can take advantage of them if you want to. But if it's everything you're pouring your energy into, all of your money is going in that direction, you probably would be better served to acknowledge that and reflect on that because you are probably suffering in ways you just don't have to choose to suffer.
Yeah. I think that's where, like when I think about it, and I know there's plenty of women who get it starting young, at like
preventatively
25.
Yes.
Which I always like laugh at, like preventative of what? Now, I understand that it has like
they'll never have a wrinkle.
The medical purposes. And so like the medical purposes aside, right? Yeah. I'm like, what are you preventing? Like wrinkles aren't going to kill you. Like wrinkles aren't like bad for your
and
health.
And they don't exist just on your face.
Right. So that I always find hilarious. Like, what you're preventing what? Like, I just, I can't. But for me, it's like, I'm 29 and maybe again, when I'm in like 10 years or 20, maybe I'll be like, oh, Julie, you were wrong then, you know, and that's fine, right? I could always change. But as of now, my stance very much is like, and again, people do you, right? Abso-freaking-lutely. For me, I'm like, I'm not going to get Botox. I don't plan on ever getting Botox just because of what I've been through with my own like body image journey, right? So for me, it's like it's this deeply personal journey of like spending 20 years of my life chasing this ideal, you know? And so I'm like, I've done so much work to like just accept who I am and accept like my body as she is and accept these things that like for me personally, and this is not for everybody, it's not for you, right, Lara? Like, but for me personally, it would be me trying to erase wrinkles. It would be for me trying to fit this ideal. Like, I know that's why I would get it personally. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, it's like, I don't want to because like, I don't want to buy into that narrative that like, I am not valuable unless I look this certain young way, right? So like, I know that's my story. I know that's not every person's story. So again, I don't judge people who get Botox. I just know for me, that's what's tied up in it is like, that ideal of like, oh, you better look this way. Otherwise, you're not valuable.
Right.
You know, and like, I don't want to support that. And like, and so that's for me personally. Or I think you're saying about like being role models for like young girls. I'm like, for me personally, like if I have a daughter, like I want to teach her, you know, that we all come in different shapes, that we age and all these things. And like, that's who I want to be. I want to be that example, you know? So like, but this is all just me personally. Like this is my own baggage, my own stuff. Well, and I recognize that everyone's different.
And
you
part
know?
Of that I think is the beauty of getting older is realizing that, as you said, you're becoming yourself. Mm-hmm. You're becoming the best version of you.
Yeah.
You're growing into an idea of who you are that's inside you that maybe you had to fight to find. Because Absolutely. The world was telling you something different, but it was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's where energy should be directed.
Yeah.
Because we have an infinite amount of energy. And when we direct that energy at things that are true and authentic and who we are, we can go much farther than if we direct that energy in trying to change things that are authentic and in our DNA and who we are.
Mm, yeah.
So like I'm a very good writer. I'm just going to say that. I am really terrible at math, data analytics. You don't want me to do a spreadsheet. I mean, I can make one, but you really don't want me to. If I spend all day trying to be a better writer, I will be an infinitely better writer. If I spend all day trying to be better at math, I might get marginally better at it, but I'll be exhausted and I will have wasted 8 hours of energy.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense for me when I think about my capabilities to feel that way, focus on my strengths. But it also makes sense that we should all focus on whatever, whoever we are at our core, our natural, authentic human being, because focusing on that, we will we will get exponentially better at being who we are rather than just fighting to try to be somebody else, which I suppose is at the core of super aging. Why spend all my energy fighting aging? Why not put that same amount of energy into being the best old person?
Yeah, I agree with everything said. And I specifically love what you had to say, Julie. Like, everyone's experience is different.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny because I feel like if we're honest, everyone has a little bit of hypocrisy that lives within them. You know, there's these versions of ourselves that we're looking to grow to be. I would love to have zero vanity.
Yeah.
I don't.
Right. We're human. Absolutely.
Of course you have some.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that when we get into the habit of shaming ourselves for, well, I do wish my skin looked a little bit younger, or I do wish, you know, there wasn't certain things going on. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
But what I love about what you all are doing with this podcast, and I love about this conversation, is we're confronting it.
Yeah.
We're confronting it and we're saying, okay, but don't just settle into that. Don't lean into that.
Yeah. Right.
You know, start to recognize. And like Haley said, would I just call you Helen?
Pretty much anything with an H.
I like H actually. What H just said is that, you know, we're constantly just growing into ourselves, but shaming, I feel like, is such an intersection between body positivity and aging. And it's rough. It's rough because we're getting constantly conflictual messages, conflicting. I can talk, I swear. Conflicting messages. And I think that softening around that, you know, forgiving that woman who exercised however many hours a day you were exercising and forced your body to eat things it didn't want to eat.
Yeah.
Forgiving ourselves, and also for those moments of still kind of falling back into certain thinking or behaviors. So Haley was talking about infinite energy and just balancing it where we want to put it.
Yeah.
You know, and if some of it is on the external, okay.
Yeah.
But when all of it lives there, that's the problem. And when all of it lives in any one place and it's not being more readily distributed, we've lived those shit shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it the questions, right? This all keeps coming back to like, what questions are we asking? Is it like, I need to do these things?
Or I just want to.
Or is it, I just want to?
Yeah.
I think that's really, really key. Because if you're like, oh, I need to get the Botox or whatever. I need to look this way. Okay, then maybe you want to like play around with that versus like, oh no, I just like want to. Like hair color, right? Like, I do because I want to, not because I need to. I'm very clear on that,
and
right?
And the follow-up question I think to that is, what would happen if I didn't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would I be okay? Would I still feel like I had just as much value in the world?
Yes.
And if we can land on, I just like this.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
We were talking about body augmentation and tattoos. Does everyone? No, you don't have a tattoo.
I don't have a bunch of tattoos. Either. I feel like I'm like one of the last people.
I know. It's differentiating me.
I've got quite a few myself.
I have a lot of them.
I know. I just have it.
Things we can't take back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we make choices that we can't always take back. But so much of it is like, I think about this all the time with fashion and like tattoos and piercings. So much of it is just an expression of creativity and just personality.
Yes.
You know, so there's also that platform for our external that exists there.
Yeah.
And certain things we want to say about ourselves, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's, and for someone who doesn't have tattoos, this may sound like a strange thing to say, but I also think there's some beauty in whether it's the augmentation or it's just looking at our own bodies and seeing the map that they are of our lives.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So saying, you know, I have stretch marks, but look at my two beautiful children. Mm-hmm. I don't have children, by the way.
Yeah.
Or I have a scar across my knee.
Yeah.
And that was from a motorcycle accident, you know, on a mountain in Thailand when I was in my 20s. And that reminds me of it. And so everything we do, whether it's someone getting a tattoo and saying, oh, I remember my young, crazy 20s when I thought that was going to be a good tattoo. they're all marks of a life that we've lived. And that's part of aging too.
Right.
Yeah.
Is seeing these things as badges to be worn proudly rather than something to be covered up.
Yeah, like you were saying with your crow's feet.
You're
like, no, I like it. They show my happiness. They show how I smile.
Yes. Like, It's the story of your life played out on your skin.
And like the cool thing with the whole like it gets to be a creative expression is like it gets to be that. It gets to be a creative expression and like fun when it's a want to, not a need to, right? Yeah. When it's a want to, I feel like I've gotten to like reclaim fashion. I've been having fun with it. Or like I realized even during quarantine, I realized I like doing my hair. And like I hadn't like done my hair like for, I mean, I work from home. My client calls are on the phone. Like I could easily just like roll to bed and not do anything. It wouldn't matter, right? But during quarantine, I realized like, wait, I really enjoy though doing my hair. And so I started like doing my hair more often. I'm like, I just like it. Like, it's just, it's fun. It's like, I listen to podcasts. Like, I enjoy it, right? And it gets to be those things that we enjoy or creative expressions when it's a want to.
That's right.
Yeah.
And how much better and more liberating and empowering is that versus when it's the need to and we're like, I have to do this to be valuable, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or to be accepted.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Haley Absolutely. Doesn't wear makeup. I think I have on eyeliner, but I don't really wear makeup either anymore. But I am so excited when I actually see somebody who like literally has quite the skill.
Amazing. I don't have that skill.
I don't have so it. My friends are amazing at doing makeup and I watch them do it with like awe because I'm so like, I have never been great at doing makeup. I used to wear like a ton of eyeliner and now I'm super lazy and I just don't. But it's so incredible to see the artistry.
Yeah,
it's a skill. I have a friend, my millennial friend, Amanda, who will probably listen to this podcast, who is who's incredible. Her makeup is perfect. And then I realized her stepfather was in the makeup business in Hollywood.
Oh.
So it's somehow, like it seeped into her.
He taught her something.
But I said, all right, Amanda, I'm going to be on Zoom all the time. And I really need to work on my face. So what should I do? So she gave me all the, I went to Glossier, I bought all the stuff. And I tried to put it on and I looked in the mirror and I thought, I think I look good, but it just doesn't look like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I have a drawer full, which I'm sure a lot of women do, of makeup that I don't really know how to use and probably won't use, but I'm glad I tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. And Amanda loves it.
Right.
So yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Alicia Keys. We do what we want.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're going to change course real quick. Because, I mean, this happens all the time. We're looking at the most amazing guests and we're like, blah, 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 blah. But we want to make sure we do talk about the Matriots because, Haley, you are one of the founding members, right, of the Matriots.
I am a proud founding member of the Matriots.
With the election being less than a month away when this episode airs, it's a really prime time to talk about the Matriots and what you guys do and all of that good stuff.
Thank you. Well, and it really ties so much into what we've been talking about today, which is representation.
Yeah.
You know, what we see has a huge impact on us, on who we believe we are, what we believe we're capable of. And I don't know if you remember, but a couple of years ago, a whole bunch of women went to Washington one day and walked around.
I think I heard of it.
Wore these pink hats. And
it's called the Woman's Walk?
Yeah, something about that. It was like
was it a parade?
Women walking something.
We'll figure it out. We'll fix that in
the
post.
Women's March.
Okay. So a number of women who went from Columbus, Ohio, which is where I'm based and where this podcast is based, came back and were inspired to do something. I said, we have to do something. What can we do? And in their reflection, they brought a number of other women, their friends, together for meetings to talk about what it is we could possibly do. And one thing we realized is that in Ohio, in the state of Ohio, our representation, female representation in politics in Ohio is embarrassingly low.
Mm. Yeah.
For a state that has produced a lot of presidents and is a very powerful state politically, women, female representation is not something that we can be proud of. Mm. So they decided, we all decided to create a PAC, a political action committee, dedicated to one thing, which is improving female representation in politics in the state of Ohio, getting more women elected. Because the key to election is money.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think we all know this and we've learned this in many, many difficult ways in the last couple of years that money is key. And women need money. They need funding, they need support, and they need encouragement to run. And so those are the three things that the Matriots PAC does. It supports women who are running for office. It encourages women to run for office and encourages women to get more involved politically and to give money and to support candidates. And it writes checks. to women running for office. Wow. And this was just 2 years ago, I think the PAC was formed, and it is now the number one political action committee in the state of Ohio.
Wow.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
We have surpassed.
Girl power.
We have done it. And the wonderful thing is the Matriots are men and they're women, and they it's not just women who give money to the PAC. It's anyone who believes that female representation in our political process is important. It's important to creating an economy in which we can all thrive. It's important in creating towns and cities and the state that we all want to live in and that where we want to raise families.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All came from asking the right questions.
Right. Yes.
We want to do something. What can we do?
Yes. And that question that we wrestled with earlier of what's a truth and what's a norm?
I love that.
Yeah, one of the first meetings that I went to was winter's night. It must have been February. I think the march was in January. Mm-hmm. It was cold. It was snowing. It was sleeting. And a bunch of women showed up at a place in downtown Columbus called the Columbus Club, which is an old boys club that only started allowing women in probably 20 years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
And so we're in this tiny little cozy room. There's a fireplace on. There's someone in white and black tie serving us martinis on trays. And the irony of that setting was not lost on anybody. That we knew we were going to be making changes that might seem dramatic at the time, but are necessary for us to make long-term changes, for us to really have sustainable change. So,
really inspiring.
I like chills.
So grateful.
So with the election coming up, our listeners are generally probably fairly informed, but I think it's so important to talk about local elections and state governance and all of this and how super, super important it is to be an informed voter and things like that. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Being informed is the first thing. So getting out, educating yourself, learning about the issues, learning about the candidates. But voting, it's amazing that we still have to talk about this, but voting in every election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not just the presidential election, because where do presidents come from?
Yeah, right.
You know, where did they come from? Senators, they come from congressmen. Sometimes they come from the business world. Yeah. But they come from somewhere. And so we need more women in every office.
Yeah.
We need them on school boards. We need women as county commissioners. We need women running local governments and municipalities.
Yeah.
Because that's where governors come from. That's where senators come from. That's where congressmen come from. And we've had incredible success the past couple of years. The number of Matriot-endorsed women that have made it into office in the last couple of election cycles has been great. But we absolutely need a turnout in November.
Yeah.
So anyone who's listening, I know this is going to air a couple of weeks before the election. You can go to the Matriots. I think it's matriots.org. I'll check that for you. Mm-hmm. And our slate of candidates is on the website. And by signing up with the Matriots, you can also get information about the candidates, which is so hard to find.
Yeah.
Knowing where to go for real good, accurate information. Every candidate that's endorsed by the Matriots sits in front of an endorsement committee, and it is a grilling. And they are asked many, many questions about their beliefs, their values, their policies, their programs. And the other thing that I really think is important about the Matriots is it is a multi-partisan organization.
Yeah.
It is not towing one political line. It is about women who share beliefs in the importance of women, in the importance of women to our economy and our politics, in the importance of women having the same rights and responsibilities as men, including dominion over our own bodies. And if you believe in those things, you can be a Matriot.
Oh, incredible. I have chills.
Yes!
I'm so grateful for the work.
Two new Matriots right here.
Oh, seriously. And yeah, listeners, like, make sure you check out. We'll have that linked in our show notes and all of that. It's just what an amazing resource, especially for our Ohio listeners. What an amazing resource. And I'm so excited. And then, of course, if you're not in Ohio, just get out there and vote. Like, let's all just make sure that you have your plan in place, whether it's absentee, whether you're voting early or on election day. Like, let's all just make sure that we get out there and exercise that right to vote in this election and all elections.
Yes. And there's more on the ballot than just the president. That's a super big, important one. Please, please vote for that one.
But, and I would also say, you know, for your viewers as well, think about running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about running. You know, women are, whether it's in politics or it's in the workplace, we are the first ones to say, I don't have the experience yet to do that. Or I should probably spend a few more years. Or I should do this job and that job before I'd consider that kind of a promotion. Men don't do that.
So true.
That's so true.
I can do that. I can do that. And they just dive right in.
Yeah.
And you know what? Most of the time they do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And we do too. Yeah. When we take the plunge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are some great organizations out there that are also there to help women. If you feel like you want to contribute to the community and to the world in that way, who can help you learn how to do it.
Oh, Haley, does the Matriots provide support for people in other states who want to basically mimic what has been done here in Ohio?
That's a great question. I know that the board has had conversations with folks in other states. There are one or two other PACs that work to get women elected, but I think none of them are multi-partisan, as far as I know. So we're the only multi-partisan PAC dedicated to that. But yeah, if you are in another state and you're interested, reach out, call me, send me an email, or talk to the Matriots, because we'd be happy to give you the playbook for how to do this in your state.
Oh, how cool
amazing.
Is that?
Amazing. Well,
I know. Last question.
So we like to wrap up the podcast with the same question for everybody. So we'll go one at a time again. So Laura, we'll go with you first because you answered second for the for the first one. You're like, oh no.
I'm good.
So our final question is, if you could talk to your younger self at any point, what is one thing that you wish that she knew?
God, that is so profoundly overwhelming.
I know, it's a big question.
It's such a big question. That I would tell her that she doesn't have to be like anybody else in the world. Mm. And that the only truth that matters is what she decides it is. And that she does not owe anybody an explanation when it affects nobody other than her.
Yes. Mm.
Love that.
And that she's adorable.
Yes.
She's adorable. Just like she is.
And Haley?
I need 24 hours before
I know.
Sorry. Big.
I did the best I could, okay? Come on.
You did a great job. I'm going to try to live up to your answer. I think if I could talk to younger Haley, I would tell her not to feel compelled to conform with other people's idea of what success looks like. But to find your own.
Love it.
Love that. Thank you both so much for
Thanks
being
for
here today.
Us.
This conversation was amazing. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and thank you for what you do. This is such an important
such an
conversation.
Incredible service.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
You're
that
putting good
lot.
Stuff out there.
Thank
Real good
you.
Stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to another episode.
We'll see you next week.
We love you. Bye. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of The Babes Mint.
We hope you're feeling a little more at home in your body and inspired as hell.
If you are ready to change your relationship with your body and yourself, we're here for you.
Snag a goddess session with Steph.
Or check out Jules' free masterclass to free yourself from diet culture for good.
The links are on our website to learn more and sign up.
And of course, if you loved this episode, we'd so appreciate it if you spread the love a little bit.
Share the app.
Rate the show.
Leave a review.
Subscribe.
You know what to do.
It's 2020.
Until next time.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.